I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture. With me, Neil Denny.
This week, Hamid Ismailov on his EBRD Literature Prize winning novel, The Devil's Dance. Hamid Ismailov is an Uzbek journalist and writer who was forced to flee Uzbekistan in 1992 due to what the state dubbed unacceptable democratic tendencies. He came to the United Kingdom, where he took a job with the BBC World Service. His works are banned in Uzbekistan. Several of his Russian original novels have been published in English translation, including The Railway, The Dead Lake, which was long listed for the 2015 Independent Foreign Fiction Prize, and The Underground. The Devil's Dance, which we're going to be talking about today, is the first of his Uzbek novels to appear in English, and the translation by Donald Rayfield has just won the 2019 EBRD Literature Prize. Hamid, welcome to Little Atoms.
Thank you very much for inviting me and for having me.
I want to talk about the title of the novel first. It's The Devil's Dance in English, and inside the novel it gives us the original translated title, which I can't read. But it also refers to the legend of the jinn as well as the devil. Tell me something about that title.
So the title is an easy one because there was a short story by the protagonist of this novel, by the main character of this novel, an iconic Uzbek writer, Abdullah Qadri. And it's called The Devil's Dance. In fact, there are different translations of this title, because some people, they prefer to say the Feast of Devils. The other people are saying Dance of Devils. We decided to go for The Devil's Dance because it's very snappy, it's dancey. So it catches exactly what we wanted to catch. Why I decided to use this particular, especially in Uzbek, for example, why I decided to use this title of Abdullah Qadri? Because for me, the Soviet period, especially what Abdullah Qadri was through, arrested by the Stalinian regime, at the same time, he was betrayed at that time by his colleagues, writers, you know, the same Uzbek writers who were, on the one hand, admiring his prose, admiring his personality. On the other hand, they were writing these complaints and letters to the KGB in order to arrest him. And he was arrested because of them. So it was kind of devil's dance, especially the role which NKVD, later it became KGB, NKVD played in all of that. They, in fact, there was sort of, you know, narrative against narrative. Narrative of for example, of the writer Abdullah Qadri, and at the same time, the narrative of the NKVD. They considered him as a nationalistic, you know, very narrow-minded nationalist and so on and so forth. Whereas when we read him, we found completely different personality. So there was a clash of the narratives here as well, which was like the devil's dance, you know. Whatever you think, for example, on the one hand, there were angelic promises of the October Revolution, yeah? You will be living in the paradise in this world. But it ended up with the devil's dances.
And so Qadiri, Abdullah Qadiri, who's the real-life Uzbek writer that is the main protagonist of this story. And the story you tell here is of a legendary lost novel of his, an idea that he had for a novel. And so you retell that story as well as his story. Basically, it's a few months of his life under arrest by the NKVD. Tell us something more about his life before then and his work.
He was one of the representatives of those people who, you know, were quite young when the October Revolution has happened. And as I said already, you know, the October Revolution promised completely new world, that everyone will be equal, those three ideas, fraternité, liberté, égalité, so equality, brotherhood, and liberty. So they promised the same, and he was one of those young people who believed into it. He accepted, in a way, October Revolution. But it turned out, little by little, he was seeing what it turns into. He was clever enough, you know, to understand where it's going, you know. All of a sudden, they were more equal than equals, for example, more fraternal than brothers, etc., etc., you know. So he started to understand it very, quite early, in the 20s, and therefore, he was quite an open-minded person who wasn't afraid to criticize even the presidents of that time. You know, he criticized in one of his satirical essays the leader of Uzbekistan at that time and immediately was arrested in 1926. And he was a kind of person, a rare person, for whom the morals and the values played enormous role, you know. During this trial, during his last speech, he said, "You better kill me because I can't return to the circle of those people who betrayed me. How am I going to look into their eyes? I would rather prefer that you kill me, you know, you shot me dead." So, you know, moral, so moral was this person, yeah? High moral person with values which he could sacrifice, for example, for the sake of these values. So he wrote one of the most iconic Uzbek novels. In fact, he wrote the first, the first Uzbek novel, because before him, the Uzbek literature existed in poetry form. All the novels were poetic forms, like, for example, you know, Shakespeare's tragedies, or Marlowe's tragedies. Everything was written in verse. He was the first who brought the prose into Uzbek literature. And he wrote a novel which was called Days Bygone. It was about the last days of the traditional Uzbek Khanates in the end of the 19th century. So the story itself, it goes like that. A person from Tashkent goes to Margilan, which is one of the cities in Fergana Valley. If to give the sort of, you know, the equivalent of English equivalent, a Londonese chap goes to Yorkshire, let's say, yeah? And without any consent of his parents, he falls in love there with a local lady, young lady. And he marries her without any consent of his mother and father. He returns to his hometown, to Tashkent, and leaves his wife at the place in Yorkshire, let's say, yeah? He comes back and parents are unhappy. They want him to marry a local girl, be it Sussex girl or Essex girl, but they want something local. And he says them, he admits that he is already married, but they insist, especially his mother insists, and he marries the second wife. And then the first wife comes to him because he loves her. And there is this rivalry between two wives. And the younger wife, the Essex or Sussex girl, poisons the Yorkshire girl. That is the novel. And because he is so unhappy to lose his love, he decides to end his life fighting the Russian conquest, you know, because at the same time Russians were conquering Central Asia. And he dies in one of the battles. That is the novel. It became one of the most iconic Uzbek novels of all time. Ask any Uzbek family, they would keep this novel somewhere along with Quran, you know, along with the holy books. It has been translated in many languages, including recently into English as well. So that is his novel, and he became very famous in the 1920s, 1930s. He wrote several other novels as well. And then in the 1937, he was going around, and we've got the, you know, memories, memoirs of different people saying to them, I am going to write another novel about the last century, about the time of the great game. I am going to write a novel about not the slave girl, but one of the girls who became the wife of three Khans or kings, local kings. They were fighting for her. They were waging wars because of her. She was like a Samarkandi Helen of Troy, let's say, Helen of Samarkand. And he wanted to write a novel about her. And he started to collect material about her. We know roughly what this novel should have been about, but they say he even started to write this novel in his manuscripts. But unfortunately, on the 31st of December 1937, he was arrested by NKVD and shot dead after, you know, 10 months in being imprisoned. He was shot dead on the 5th of October 1938. All his manuscripts were taken by NKVD. And they were burnt out. And we haven't got anything left from his manuscripts. Apart from these, you know, memoirs of other people that he wanted to write this novel. So that is his life. And I decided, we'll be talking about that, how I came to this idea, how I came up with this idea. But we can talk about that. But that is his life.
So this is the story that you tell in this novel, this great lost novel, the heroine of this novel, Oihan. Tell us who she is.
She is this lady who he wanted to depict. Yeah, in his novel, he used to say, I am going to write this novel in a such manner that it will supersede all I've written before. It'll be so beautiful that everyone will forget what I wrote before that. So that we know. Therefore, she was one of the ultimate beauties of that time, you know, because three kings were fighting for her. She was ultimate beauty. But we know that she was in love with her boy, you know, and she wanted to marry another boy. But she was taken by one of the kings. And there are different views about her. Some people, until now, the majority of people considered her as the luckiest woman of this earth, you know, who was on this earth, because three kings were after her and she was enjoying the company of three kings. But very often they forget that they were forcing her to marry, you know, whereas he had her love, you know, he had her plans, he wanted to marry her beloved person, and so on and so forth. But she was, you know, forced to marry those kings, you know, who were in a way, you know, humiliating her, insulting her, trumping basically, you know, her honor and her personality.
The novel that we're talking about, The Devil's Dance, tells the story of Kadiri. He's in prison. He wants to write this novel about this woman, Oihan, and the three Khans. But as you said, all of the manuscripts that he made have gone. They've been burned. We have some hearsay about what it might have been about. Now, of course, in reconstructing this, you could have just made it up. That's fine. But how do you go about telling this story and staying true to Kadiri's vision for it?
One thing, I read everything Kadiri wrote, yeah, and I love what he writes, because he is a master of the prose, you know, he master of the Uzbek language. He used to call himself, you know, a thief. In what sense a thief? He used to go to chaikhanas, tea houses, like to the pubs, yeah, local pubs of Uzbekistan, and listen to people, you know, and he would imitate wonderful characters, you know, he would imitate them through the words, for example. any person, for example, which he describes is a live person. You know, you can immediately imagine this person sitting in front of you or talking to you, because he describes him so well through his speech, through his habits, through his gestures. So he is a wonderful writer. Therefore, I learned quite a lot from him. At the same time, I must say that initially he wasn't on my radars, you know, for this novel. Initially, I wanted to pay tribute to this country because I'm living in this country for 25 years, you know, and I owe this country something, you know. And I wanted to write something about the great game. When the English people were discovering Samarkand, Bukhara. Some of them, they even lost their heads there, you know. They were beheaded, Captain Connolly or Colonel Stoddart, they were beheaded there. So they paid quite a lot of price to learn what kind of people live there. And I wanted to bring them into life as well. All those connections between the Central Asia and this country. So my idea was to write something about the great game. At the same time, I had an idea to write a novel about our wonderful poet, the contemporary of Abdullah Qadri, whose name is Cholpon. He is of the scale of Yeats, of the scale of, you know, Thomas Stern Eliot. He is our, you know, treasure in poetry of the 20th century. And I wanted to write something about him. But then I realized that he was a contemporary to Qadri, who wanted to write about that time as well. And all of a sudden, everything came together. You know, I decided to write a stereoscopical novel, one about the great game, but through this Oihon, poor Oihon. Ultimately, Captain Connolly meets Oihon in my novel. So there is a moment of fiction there, lots of moments of fiction. But at the same time, I think because I was following all the documents available, including the diaries of Captain Connolly and Stoddart, including lots of documents of people who were ascertaining their fate in Samarkand and Bukhara. So I went through tons of the material. And therefore, I was absolutely sure that I can write something interesting about that time based on these documents, but at the same time, to give some sort of liberty to my imagination.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Hamid Ismailov. We're talking about his novel, The Devil's Dance, which was translated from the Uzbek into English by Donald Rayfield and has just recently won the EBRD Literature Prize 2019. And Hamid, that time, the time of Stalin and the Soviet Union is gone now. Uzbekistan is again an independent country. But as you mentioned in the first part, you've not been back there since 1992.
As a BBC person, I was in Uzbekistan several times. I've been to Uzbekistan several times, you know, but before 2005 mostly, because we had an office there. But in 2005, after the massacre in Andijan, where the governmental forces used disproportional force against the civil population. So, and we were broadcasting from this event, you know, they decided to put a ban on many of us, including myself, apparently. Maybe my writing played a certain role, maybe my journalism played a certain role, but my last attempt in 2017, when I was once again a member of the BBC delegation coming to Uzbekistan, they allowed every member of the delegation, but they disallowed me and deported from the airport, not explaining why, not explaining who gave this order or whatever. They just said that you are in the lists, so please go with us. So I spent 4 or 5 hours in a kind of cell there, and then they put me into the plane to Istanbul and deported me. So that is the story, how it goes about why I'm there, of my relationship with Uzbekistan. I don't know why they are banning, for example, my work, why I am in this so-called list, and so on and so forth. I never, you know, wrote any manifestos, or I can't see in my work any subversive motives, purely political or whatever, you know. I can guess that, you know, any honest writer is subversive by his or her nature. Because what the honest writer does, he describes or she describes the reality. But the authorities, they've got their own sort of, you know, version of reality. That we are living in paradise, that we are absolutely happy people, and so on and so forth. So when you are breaking their image of reality, you are becoming immediately subversive. I think it's more about my aesthetics, like Sinevsky said, you know, rather than anything political, you know. We have differences on aesthetical, on cultural ground, I think, in understanding the reality of nowadays Uzbekistan, realities of nowadays world.
And yet you're bringing Uzbek culture, writing, its poetry to a worldwide audience. Why do they not see that?
Once again, it's quite enigmatic thing, and it's a puzzle for me, you know. Puzzle to the extent that, for example, they've announced the prize, EBRD prize for this book. As any Uzbek, you should be proud that Uzbek literature is recognized by the world, by the specialists, experts, readers, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, I know recently, for example, Union of Uzbek Writers gathered, and some of the representatives of this union said, this award is a plot against Uzbekistan, political plot against Uzbekistan. We have to disclose who is behind, what kind of groups are behind of that. We should protect our youth of this novel, and so on and so forth. It's a Stalinian language, you know. It's exactly the language which poor Abdullah Qadri was suffering from, you know, or Cholpan, or Fitra, and many others were suffering from. And it's a modern 21st century Uzbekistan. So sometimes I'm wondering what happens there.
This book has just recently been translated and published in English, but it's not a new novel. You wrote it, I think, in 2012, and your work is banned in Uzbekistan. So how do you get Uzbeks to read your work?
For example, with this book, when I wrote this book and when I was sure that the book is ready, I started to publish this book chapter by chapter on my Facebook. And it became, in a way, viral, you know. People started to repost it, to share to publish in newspapers in the neighboring countries, to print it out and hand over to different people. It became something, you know. I've got plenty, thousands of emails or Facebook, sort of, you know, comments and so on and so forth from that time. So it became an event for people. Sometimes, for example, with my other books, for example, I read them and I put on YouTube, let's say, as a full audio book. Once again, people read, people listen to these books. So there is social media now. So it's very difficult to censor nowadays, you know, especially with the internet, with the all kind of chat groups and so on and so forth. So I can't see this as a problem. But there is sort of aggressive silencing. That is a problem. For example, they don't mention or people are not allowed to mention my name, let's say. Yeah, if they mention, so they face apparently some kind of, you know, problems or whatever. And I've seen many, for example, especially on the Facebook, for example, someone is commenting, saying, for example, why we're not publishing Hamid Ismailov's book, suggesting to the publishers. Yeah. Next week, I'm looking, this comment has gone, for example, immediately, you know, so it was deleted. So apparently there were pressure on this person to take it out. So I can feel and I can see that there is this aggressive silencing about my name. But what can I do? All I can just put on Facebook, on Twitter or on YouTube or other social media.
So Karimov, who was the post-Soviet leader of Uzbekistan, and who was obviously in charge when you were banned, is dead now. But still, you know, that's a while ago now, and still you're not allowed back as it stands. Are you hopeful that this will change in the future?
I don't know. The strange thing was, I was believing that with Karimov, all this ban has gone. But as I'm saying, you know, that I was a member of official delegation in 2017, when the new president was in full power already. And yet they didn't allow me. And those signals which are coming now, for example, from this, you know, Union of Uzbek Writers, are quite worrying, you know. These kind of, you know, signals, they were not even during the Karimov time, funny enough, you know. What happens, on the one hand, I'm optimistic because the country is opening up economically, liberalizing, opened up to other countries of the region. There are lots of positives, you know. But on the other hand, there are these issues, for example, when I look at my personal affairs, for example, I can see all these troubling moments.
What does it mean for you that the book has won this prize, the EBRD Literature Prize?
For me, first of all, it's recognition of the Uzbek literature, because luckily this book is about Uzbek literature in different forms. It's about the court poetry, it's about the women poets, it's about the poetry competitions, it's about the one of our best writers of the 20th century, it's about the best poets of the 20th century. It's, in a way, encyclopedia of Uzbek literary life. And I'm proud that people are reading, and in a way, I'm serving as a bridge between my literature and readers all over the world.
Just to finish us off then, normally I would say, would you read as a selection from the novel? But I know you've got something in Uzbek, so would you read us something in Uzbek?
You know, as a tribute to the translators, yeah, I myself was a translator for many years. I used to translate different poems, different, especially poems. Why I'm paying tribute to translators? For example, this book was translated by Donald Rayfield, and he specifically learned Uzbek on the basis of his Turkish to translate this book. These are wonderful people who are bringing different cultures to this country. You know, they should be treasured by all of us.
In Donald's note about the translation at the back of the book, he mentions one of the difficulties of translating or learning Uzbek is that there's been innumerable alphabets replaced in the Uzbek language over the past century. Why was that?
That was, you know, due to the political changes. For example, traditionally, the Uzbek alphabet was the Arabic one. But with the October Revolution, they decided to... It's the end of the religion, it's the end of Islam, it's the end of the Arabic influence. Therefore, they decided to change it into Latin. So then they've improved this Latin once again. Then they decided to bring it closer to the Russian language. In the 40s, they decided to change the Latin into Cyrillic. After the independence, they decided to be closer to the open world and decided once again to go for the Latin. Now they are thinking once again to change this Latin and be closer to the Turkish world. So it's non-stop changing of the alphabet. And it's disaster because with every change of the alphabet, the, you know, cultural level of people is dropping. Because, for example, those who read Arabic, they couldn't read in Cyrillic or in Latin, for example. Those who read in Latin, they couldn't read in Cyrillic, for example. Over the last 25 years, those people who were studying Latin, they can't read in Cyrillic, but 90% of the fiction was published in Cyrillic. Only 10% of fiction was published in Latin. And exactly the sort of, you know, the ratio is the other way around in scientific books. You know, those who are in Cyrillic, they can't read the new scientific books, whereas those people are left without fiction. So it's always a disaster. I'll read you one poem of Paul Verlaine, you know, which is Le sanglot long devient long, but I'll read it in Uzbek, in my own translation. Oh, hu fron rejeksemon küskünlere, dil ortanar göya sonar saz unlere, yerge bırak solert trak saat bonge sonsa kuyash, tokkende yaş umrum tonge, şu şu derhal soğuk şamal meni kular, undan nar çeng singer, hazan bırla, hazan bırla.
I've been talking to Hamid Ismailov. We've been talking about his novel, The Devil's Dance, which was originally published in Uzbek and is translated into English by Donald Rayfield in this edition, which is by Tilted Axis Press. Hamid, thank you so much for coming in and sharing it with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced and presented by me, Neil Denny, edited by Sky Redman, and was first broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM. Little Atoms is supported by 89UP and hosted by Acast. If you enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and even tell a friend. Thanks for listening.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.